and especially in the area of doubtful things. And I want to bring to your attention that it is doubtful things, not in those areas where the Scripture definitely spells out between right and wrong, but in areas regarding doubtful things. And Paul gives us a classic example of the problem in Corinth, which was meat that was being offered unto idols. What do we do about eating that? Can we conscientiously eat it? And what are the principles involved in making a decision between that which is right and wrong? And I suppose after all of these weeks, you're getting rather tired of hearing me say somewhat the same thing with a little different slant each week. It's like the pastor that had a hobby horse. He loved to preach on baptism. And for six Sundays in a row, he preached on baptism. And finally, his deacons got after him and met, and they decided, how in the world can we get him to preach on something besides baptism? So one of them came up with the idea, let's just give him a pill, just a common, ordinary pill. And let's let him come up with a theme on that pill, preach on that pill. So the following Sunday morning, he took the pill and he held it up in his hand. And he said, now there are many different kinds of pills for many different kinds of things. There are large pills, there are small pills, there are medium-sized pills, all different kinds of pills. He said, there's also the gospel, which brings me to my subject this morning, baptism. And I'm beginning to feel a little bit like that after several weeks in 1 Corinthians 8 through 10, that we're dealing with the same thing. But be patient, because this is our last time in this area, and Paul introduces us to two new principles regarding our behavior and conduct and how we can order our lives in this area of doubtful things as we move into the last few verses of chapter 10. Now, you remember back in chapter 8, the subject is food that is being offered unto idols. And Paul says, yes, I have the liberty, the freedom to partake, but on the other hand, my life is not governed just by knowledge alone, but rather by love and concern for how others may take it. And though I may have that right and that liberty to partake of it myself for the sake of how it may affect others, and whether or not it might be a stumbling block in the life of someone else, is really the criterion by which I determine what is right and what is wrong. So love is the regulator. You see, we would need no laws if we lived in a society where everyone loved his fellow man. That's the whole principle of the New Testament. Love is the fulfillment of the law. There would be no such thing as someone driving 100 miles an hour down through the streets of San Antonio, because you would have that love and respect and regard for your fellow man and his life to where there's no way you could allow the car to go 100 miles an hour through the city. And so love is that fulfillment. It's like the employer one time who was interviewing some applicants for a job, and He told the applicant, he says, now I'm going to write five words down here on the board, and I want you to tell me which word is out of place. And he wrote down the following words: man, woman, eggs, carpet, and love. Now he said, which of those five words is out of place? And the applicant thought for a moment, and then he answered, well, you can beat a man, you can beat a woman, you can beat eggs, you can beat a carpet, but you can't beat loving. And this is what Paul is saying this morning. You cannot beat loving your fellow man in Jesus Christ. Now in chapter 9, he gives us a personal example, just to review here for a moment, a personal example of how he himself was willing to forego certain rights in order that his life might be of greatest possible benefit and usefulness in the hands of God. And he in no way wanted to hinder his own ministry or hinder the gospel, as he puts it, cut in or destroy a bridge in which the gospel might move across into the Corinthian territory and have a positive effect. And so he said, I was willing to forego even collecting anything financially from you or receiving any financial support, even though I had that right as a minister of the gospel to be able to share in material things, because I had a spiritual ministry among you. Then finally, in the last part of chapter 9, beginning with verse 24, he gives us the illustration of the athlete. He says, now the athlete may have certain liberties. And we mentioned that last week regarding Muhammad Ali. You can train, or you can just sort of let your training go. You may have that liberty. But on the other hand, you're going to pay for it in the end. You're not going to make as good a showing. And he says, if you really want to run a good race and you want to win the prize, then that means that you're going to forego certain rights that you may have, such as the right of eating a large meal, indulging in certain areas where others may feel that privilege. I remember in high school, I couldn't wait till our basketball season was over, our senior year, and as far as I was concerned, I just wanted to kiss the whole thing goodbye because I was tired of the training, tired of the discipline, and just couldn't wait till I got out of school. And many times this is the way we look at the Christian life. We get tired of the discipline, tired of doing without, and yet if we're going to run a good race and win the prize, we need to have this discipline. Verse 25, as Paul talks here, everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. And I think the problem, as I thought about this week, is you see, too many of us want the best of both worlds. We want the best of this world as well as the best of the next world. And Paul's saying you just can't do it. And he really emphasizes that in the last part of chapter 10. You know, we want all of these physical valuables, and we're willing to give our life and our time to laying up great things here upon earth. And it all is to absolutely no avail. Futility of futilities, or vanity of vanities, as Solomon says. And we learn the hard way that there's no way that you can indulge in this life and expect or win a good race, which is going to bring you recognition and honor in the next life. So we must exercise self-control in all things. Well, then in chapters 10, verses 1 through 13, Paul is giving us the illustration here of a whole nation, a whole multitude of people, perhaps some 3 million, who did not exercise self-control. And out of that great